Signing up for ACA healthcare coverage. What's different this year? More than 100,000 Mainers depend on the Affordable Care Act for their healthcare coverage. The window to enroll in the ACA opened November 1st and ends December 15th. There's some good news this year. Premium rates are down. In fact, Maine is one of the states seeing the highest premium drops. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn about other ways in which the ACA coverage has or hasn't changed this year. We'll discuss how the Trump administration has altered the program, how the case currently before the Supreme Court might affect enrollees, and the impact of the COVID pandemic on coverage. What are your questions about the ACA and health insurance enrollment? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. Open enrollment for coverage under the Affordable Care Act is underway and continues through December 15th. Today, we'll hear from experts on changes to the ACA, the recent case before the U.S. Supreme Court, and we'll get answers to your questions about signing up. My guest, Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent of Kaiser Health News. She's the former health policy correspondent for NPR and author of Healthcare Politics and Policy A to Z. And also Joanne Rawlings-Secunda, who is the Director of the Consumer Health Care Division of the Maine Bureau of Insurance, and Kate Endy, Policy Director for Consumers for Affordable Healthcare. We invite your questions and comments. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll start the hour, though, with Jean Lambrew, the Commissioner of Maine's Department of Health and Human Services. Commissioner Lambrew, thank you for calling in and welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thank you, Jennifer, for having me.
What do we know about how the COVID pandemic has affected enrollment in the ACA this year? Have many people lost their private insurance because they've lost their jobs?
We are very concerned about what this once-in-a-century pandemic is doing to health coverage in Maine. We know that for people with COVID-19, treatment requires intensive and often expensive care. For some, these health problems can last weeks and in some cases months. We also know that anxiety, depression, substance use disorders have increased during the pandemic. Additionally, some people who need chronic care have skipped visits, have delayed care for fear of contracting COVID-19 by going to their health care providers, and some people have lost their jobs and their job-based health insurance. We're worried that people who have lost their jobs think they'll find a new job soon and are waiting to get health insurance coverage, so our message is don't wait. Go to covermaine.gov, look at your options. We are excited about the fact that we have more affordable choices than ever, and we have seen increased interest in coverage as we started this open enrollment period on November 1st. So we do urge everybody to check out coverme.gov.
Probably a little early to know exactly what the numbers are, how many more people will be signing up.
It is, and an exciting part of this year is that for the first time, we are in Maine managing our marketing, managing our consumer assistance, including our Navigator program. We did because, as everybody in Maine knows, there were many different ads on TV before the election that made it very hard for us to be able to get the messages through in that period. So we are gearing a lot of our advertising and energy to raise awareness of people's options now as well as after Thanksgiving. Again, the deadline for health insurance marketplace, the private insurance coverage, is November 15th. But people can sign up for MaineCare, also known as Medicaid, at any time during the year.
Okay, and you said November 15th, but it's December 15th,
right? I'm sorry,
right?
December 15th. Yeah. I apologize. Yep.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I figured as much. What are some of the new benefits under the Made for Maine Health Coverage Act? What is the Made for Maine Health Coverage Act?
So Governor Mills, working with bipartisan members of the Maine State Legislature, passed this bill, which this year means a few great changes. First of all, people with private health insurance coverage that's regulated by the state can get their first primary care visit, their first behavioral health visit without a deductible, without a copay. They also can get the second and third visits before the deductible paying copays. In other words, if you need basic health care, you don't have to get all the way through your deductible before you get some help. Additionally, there is a new cap on how much people with diabetes pay for insulin, $35 per prescription for a 30-day supply. Those are just some of the changes that take effect this year, as well as taking more control of our coverage options. We'll be moving towards running more of our health insurance marketplace here in Maine this year and hopefully next year as we really try to take advantage of tailoring all of our programs towards Maine people.
All right, a couple questions. You said those go into effect this year. Are they already into effect?
Beginning January 1 okay. is when people with private insurance can get better primary care and behavioral health coverage. Beginning now, we are doing our own marketing and consumer assistance to get people help in signing up for coverage.
All right. And I understand the state has received a waiver in order to do some of these things, including a state-based reinsurance program. What does that mean?
So Maine is one of about a dozen or more states that has gotten assistance to federal funding, I should say, to lower private health insurance premiums by spreading out the cost of the most sick and most expensive people across a large pool of people. It's a complicated concept, but by risk sharing, we can lower premiums and then pass along those savings to Maine consumers. That does mean, as Joanne probably could talk about more, that premiums this year in the individual market are over 13% lower than they were last year. In other words, premiums are not going up, they're going down, and that's in part due to this created program that Maine has participated in and will be hopefully expanding in the years to come.
All right. Commissioner Lambert, thank you so much for joining us today. That's Jean Lambert, the Commissioner of Maine's Department of Health and Human Services. I want to turn to you now, Kate, Endy, and ask you something that's related to what Commissioner Lambert just said about how people who may have lost their job and are thinking that they might get insurance coverage through a new job. She's encouraging people to sign up for a ACA coverage in between. How would that work? Let's say somebody signs up for coverage under the marketplace, but then in February or March gets a new job. Can they then drop it?
Absolutely. So you can make changes to your marketplace account at any point in the year, and you can end coverage at any point. So right now we're in open enrollment, so it's really important that people sign up now so that they don't miss their opportunity. But then if they get an offer of coverage later on, they can always drop their marketplace coverage.
All right. And Kate, I understand 100,000 Mainers use the ACA marketplace for insurance. Who are these enrollees? What is their profile?
So people using the marketplace, you know, it's a lot of different populations, but we're really looking at people who are under 65 for the most part, or people who are not qualifying for Medicare already, or who don't have Maine Care, who don't have another offer of employer coverage. So we see a lot of, you know, people who are, you know, students or self-employed, or they work for a company that just doesn't offer benefits to them.
And Kate, are there many people in Maine, do you think, who qualify and do not enroll?
Absolutely. We hear from people all the time who, you know, didn't realize what, you know, they could qualify for, didn't realize that plans were so affordable. And then, you know, once we tell them, you know, it's always comes as a welcome surprise usually. But there's a number of people that are not signed up for both marketplace coverage as well as MainCare who could actually be eligible for potentially free insurance through MainCare. And so that's why we think it's, you know, so important for people to just go and explore their options. And, you know, they can apply for both right on healthcare.gov.
Joanne, Commissioner Lambrew mentioned that premiums are down an average, I think she said 13% in Maine. Why? Why is it that Maine was able to drop premiums so much in 1 year?
Well, first off, I want to expand a little bit on that point in that I want to be very clear. We're talking about the average is 13%, which means that, you know, individual people might see lower or might see higher. It depends on their age, depends on a lot of factors. So I just wanted to clarify that. Why it goes back in a large extent to what she was talking about with the waiver that you mentioned. The fact that, you know, you look at insurance companies hate risk. So the more risk you take out by having this specific pool, the lower the premiums can go because they're not trying to conservatively figure out, well, we've got to, you know, jack up our rates just in case. So take out the just in case factor, and that helps bring the premiums way down.
All right. Julie Rovner, I want to bring you into the conversation, sort of over, sort of a backdrop to this entire conversation is that U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments in a case that could undermine the ACA, those arguments just last week. Do you have a sense about whether the case has merit and how the court might rule?
Well, we should start by saying that most legal analysts did not think the case had very much merit. It was brought by a group of Republican states led by their attorneys general, arguing that because Congress reduced the penalty for not having insurance to zero starting in 2019, there was no more tax, and it was only the tax that got the law upheld in the first place in 2012, and therefore the whole law is unconstitutional. We were pretty sure going in that Chief Justice Roberts wasn't likely to buy that argument. He voted to maintain the law, even in the face of two much stronger challenges to it. In fact, he wrote that 2012 opinion that said it's a tax and therefore an appropriate use of Congress's powers. But with the replacement of Justice Ginsburg, with Justice Amy Coney Barrett, there was some concern that even if Chief Justice, did not buy this line of argument, that would still be only four votes and perhaps the other five could band together to either undermine or get rid of the law entirely. What we saw, however, was that Justice Kavanaugh, who has in the past shown a reluctance to strike down entire statutes because one portion of them might be impermissible, basically said that. So it's not looking likely that the law will be struck down, but it is still possible. You can't tell everything from oral arguments, and we won't have a decision in this case until probably next spring at the soonest, and early next summer at the latest. So it really shouldn't impact people who are looking at the enrollment period for next year's plans. They should go ahead and sign up and assume that the law will still be there. Also, even if the Supreme Court were to strike it down, Congress could fix the problem, although whether a Senate controlled by Republicans would want to is yet another question.
What changes has the Trump administration made in the ACA, and what's been the impact of those changes?
Well, they've done sort of everything they can to undermine it, basically, although now they're taking credit for some of these lowered premiums. And we are, I mean, not just Maine. Maine and Maryland, two states that put in what Commissioner Lambrew spoke about, this reinsurance programs that basically say that the government will pay for the most expensive patients, and that lets insurers reduce premiums for everybody else. So they've seen sort of bigger drops, but even nationwide, we've seen premiums start to drop. The Trump administration has done things like eliminated basically all outreach and marketing so that people might not know when it's open enrollment. They've cut back the number of assisters and navigators, people who help people sign up. The president in 2017 rather famously canceled some payments that were going to insurers to help them give extra subsidies to people with lower incomes, although that ended up backfiring on the administration at least because of workarounds that states managed to do that ended up lowering premiums for a lot of people. And the administration also has allowed other types of plans to be offered, thing particularly short-term, limited-duration plans, which can now go for an entire year, so they're not such short-term. That many of those don't cover pre-existing conditions, but they could draw off the healthier people and therefore boost premiums in the individual, the Affordable Care Act-compliant market. So far, we haven't seen that happen, and despite everybody's predictions, particularly when the penalty for not having insurance went away, the Affordable Care Act is clicking right along.
Joanne, I want to ask you, I know that CoverMe is the state's website for signing up, but I was surprised to learn that's not the only way to sign up for the ACA, for coverage.
Well, you can also go directly to healthcare.gov. I mean, CoverMe will eventually link you with healthcare.gov, which is the way you're going to want to go, particularly if you think that you're going to be eligible for subsidies. But then there's also, you can work with navigators and other assisters, and Kate's really the expert on that piece.
Kate?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Joanne mentioned, you can sign up directly online at healthcare.gov, but there's also a number of assisters and navigators throughout the state that are available to help walk you through that process. And especially now during COVID, a lot of assisters are providing that assistance remotely, but in-person assistance is still available at a lot of different locations. So if anybody's looking for help filling out the application, I'd encourage them to call our helpline at 1-800-965-7476. And you can also find a list of different navigators and in-person assistance on enroll207.com.
All right. And Kate, I'm going to repeat that, 1-800-965-7476. Let's say I'm one of these people who has not applied for health insurance coverage under the ACA before. I'm realizing that maybe I qualify, or perhaps I've lost my job and I'm thinking that now I'm going to apply. What should I expect? How long will it take? How many days before December 15th should I wait? I mean, is there a disadvantage to waiting till December 14th? What should I know?
I would encourage people to apply as soon as possible. You have until December 15th, but and the application doesn't take long. I'd say to carve out about an hour. For some people, it takes less. For some people, it's longer, depending on their situation. But you really want to be able to explore all of your plan options at the end. There's 30 different plans available about that number. So, you want to have time to kind of go through, check the different providers that are covered, if that's important to you, check what, your prescriptions and see which plans are going to cover those. And so oftentimes, people want to, check in with their other family members on the plan to make sure the coverage is going to work for them. Or sometimes you might have to upload some documents in certain situations. And so, just out of caution, we always, encourage people to go in as early as possible, just in case there's something that comes up or if there's something they want to mull over for a few days, then they have that option.
All right. Well, we're talking about healthcare coverage and specifically about the ACA enrollment period. If you have a question for our experts, you can call 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post a comment to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Encore Renewable Energy, committed to fueling Maine's economic recovery with solar energy for businesses and institutions. Encore.eco. And Acadia Family Center in Southwest Harbor, dedicated to treatment, recovery, and well-being for those facing mental health issues or the disease of addiction.
This week on Maine's Political Pulse, we take one last look at Republican Senator Susan Collins' decisive win, how she did it, and what it might mean for the Biden administration. Also, we examine the challenges confronting Governor Janet Mills and the new legislature as both gear up for a new session and the construction of the state's next two-year budget. Join me, Steve Missler, and Mal Leary for Maine's Political Pulse, now with a newsletter. Listen or subscribe anytime at mainepublic.org/pulse.
Election Day has come and gone. No doubt you followed the election closely and are still following it. And another no doubt is that you probably counted on Maine Public Radio to keep you informed, up to date, and understanding the developments and issues. Having a news source you can trust in this day and age is more important than it ever was. So thank you for public radio, because you make it possible with your financial support. Our fall supporter drive starts on Wednesday, but you can help give it a head start by visiting mainepublic.org at any time or by calling 1-800-866-1475. That number again, 1-800-866-1475. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we are discussing the Affordable Care Act. My guest, Kate Endy, Policy Director, Consumers for Affordable Healthcare. Joanne Rawlings-Secunda, who is Director of the Consumer Healthcare Division of the Maine Bureau of Insurance. And Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News. We want to hear from you. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Here's an email from Melissa. Although I have no medical benefits and need them, I don't want to sign up for the ACA because I think I will regret it after the current administration is done compromising it before the inauguration in January. Can you explain what changes will happen to the ACA with a new administration? And why can't I wait to sign up until next year? Julie, I'm going to have you take the first part of that. This person concerned that President Trump's administration will do things to undermine the ACA between now and January. Is her concern founded?
It's possible, although I don't think those things are very high on the list of what the administration is working on. And it's also possible that the incoming Biden administration could have another round of open enrollment for the ACA. In fact, there was a lot of pressure on that, not because the administrations are changing, but because of the pandemic. It's important, and I think this hasn't gotten mentioned yet, if you sign up and you get a job with health insurance, you can drop your plan. If you lose that job and lose your health insurance, you get your own personal open enrollment period in which you can sign up again, either for the plan you had or for a new plan. But generally, unless you have a life change, you can only sign up during the open enrollment. And one of the things that the Trump administration did that he didn't mention was shorten that open enrollment period. It used to be 12 weeks. Now it's 6 weeks, which is why it only goes from November 1st to December 15th. But I would not be that surprised to see another open enrollment period in 2021. But I wouldn't this is a triple negative. I wouldn't not sign up anticipating that. I don't, you know, obviously the Trump administration is going to do what the Trump administration is going to do, but anything they're going to do between now and January 20th using executive power, an incoming Biden administration could undo using executive power.
All right. And to the second part of that, Kate, she says, and why can't I wait to sign up until next year? Kate?
Sorry. So there's an annual open enrollment period for most people. As Julie mentioned, if you experience certain qualifying events, such as losing other health insurance, you can qualify for a special enrollment period mid-year. But most people can only enroll during the annual open enrollment period, which ends December 15th. And as Julie mentioned, while it's possible there could be, you know, an additional period with a new Biden administration, we don't know that for sure. And so, you know, I'd be hesitant for anyone to actually rely, you know, on hoping that there would be. And also, I'll just mention that, you know, if you sign up for a plan now, you know, that plan contract or policy isn't going to change mid-year. You know, that's, you know, a contract with you and the insurance company, and it's you know, there's nothing that's going to be able to change that between now and January.
I have an email here from Elspeth, and I'll send this question to you or this comment to you, Joanne. She writes, my monthly insurance payment with Harvard Pilgrim is going down approximately $60 a month. However, my deductible went up $1,000 and max out-of-pocket expenses also increased by $1,000. So a $720 yearly savings is offset by potential extra costs of $2,000. Not exactly a great improvement for the self-insured.
Well, what I would respond to Elspeth is that this is why it's a great idea right now with open enrollment to shop around. I mean, a lot of times people just go straight into auto re-enrollment, and this is the kind of thing that could potentially happen. So if you shop, she might be able to find something that works out better for her right now.
All right, there we go. We're going to go to a caller. We'll go to Stan calling from Augusta. Hi, Stan. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Kind of an odd question. My wife has Alzheimer's. She's 64 years old, been put on disability through Social Security. She was on a COBRA plan when I retired from the city. At the end of October, it ran out. She's going on to Medicare 1st of February. Do I spin the wheel and not look for a plan for 3 months, or should I be looking at ACA, or I'm just looking for a little guidance?
Kate?
Yeah, so, you know, I think that's a great example of, you know, being able to sign up for a marketplace plan that, you know, for a short period of time, because you can cancel it, you know, once Medicare kicks in, but then, you know, have that security knowing that if something were to happen, you know, she's covered right now. So I'd recommend to, you know, go to healthcare.gov or, you know, call our helpline and we can kind of walk through the different options with you. And your wife to see if any of them would be a good fit.
All right, Stan. And a related question I'm also going to put to you, Kate, because it sounds like similar, not the same. An email from Kathy. My husband and I are insured through the marketplace. I am the policy subscriber. He will be on Medicare effective 3/1/21. So we want to carry insurance for only myself after that date. Is there a way for me to cancel his coverage at that time while continuing my own coverage? I won't be eligible for Medicare until June of 22.
Yes, there's absolutely a way to do that. I'd recommend contacting our helpline or reaching out to a navigator or other assister for help making that change, just to make sure that everything goes through properly. But there's absolutely a way to do that. And so leading up to, you know, when your husband would be starting his Medicare, you know, in the month before that, I'd reach out, give us a call at 1-800-965-7476.
All right, we'll go to Skip calling from Stonington. Hi, Skip, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about a Medicare ad that is on television with Joe Namath, and he talks about Medicare recipients being able to get additional benefits. And my question is this a legitimate thing, legitimate ad? Because every time the ad is on, there's a different 800 number, and I don't know whether it's a government agency or a private insurance company that is sponsoring these ads.
Skip, thanks. Julie Rovner, do you know about the Joe Namath ads? What are these?
Yes, they run here in Maryland, too. These couple of weeks are crossover, so it's open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act. It's also open enrollment for Medicare right now. There are private Medicare plans that do offer extra benefits. They get paid by the government, and they have to provide a certain number of dollars, towards medical care. And a lot of them, basically, the trade-off if you join, they're called Medicare Advantage plans. If you join Medicare Advantage plans, you have to stay in that insurance company's network. Unlike traditional Medicare, where you can go to any doctor or hospital that accepts Medicare. So if you're willing to stay in network, you can sometimes get additional benefits, often drug coverage, sometimes gym membership, sometimes help with transportation, sometimes help with things that the traditional Medicare doesn't cover, like dental and vision care. So Medicare Advantage is pretty popular because so many people who are now going into Medicare are used to being in network. So it's not as big a a sacrifice for most people as it used to be. A lot of these ads are for either individual insurance companies, or some of them are for agents and brokers who sell for a lot of different companies. So it's, if you go to Medicare.gov, they have a really good comparison tool for Medicare Advantage plans and for Medicare prescription drug plans.
Now, if I could just jump in too, here in Maine, if you get onto a Medicare Advantage plan, you can change your mind and go back to regular Medicare for up to 3 years. So you do have a little more flexibility here than you do in other states.
Skip, there you go. Thank you both for that answer. We have an email here from Nyree in Bath. When the ACA first came into being, I applied and was not eligible because my income was too low. I was denied Medicaid because I have a 401k account from a previous employer. I was told to use that fund for health care, but there is a big penalty if you take out 401k money before you reach a certain age, so I don't want to do that. Is that ruling going to be changed? Kate, what can you tell Nyree?
So initially, there was what's called the coverage gap in Maine, and that's what a lot of people who were not eligible for marketplace subsidies because their income was too low were falling into. Since then, Mainers passed by ballot referendum Maine Care Expansion, which Governor Mills implemented when she took office last year. And now, you know, most people who have incomes below that threshold should be able to qualify for free health care through Maine Care. For most people, assets are not counted. And so a retirement account like a 401k would not be counted against you for applying.
All right. Well, good question. An email here from Pat. Pat has three questions. We've already answered the first. Are there still government navigators? And Kate, yes, Consumers for Affordable Healthcare has navigators. But she also asks, my COBRA plan ends December 31st, 2020. Should I enroll under the process for special enrollment period or open enrollment period? Kate?
You could just, if it ends at the end of December, they're both going to start on January 1st. And so you can just apply, you know, through open enrollment, because there's not going to be a difference there in terms of when your coverage would start. And sometimes special enrollments, you might have to provide some additional information. So for most people, just going in and, you know, as part of the open enrollment period would probably be easiest. But the application will walk you through those questions.
All right. If you all have a question, the phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment to our Facebook page. We'll go to Mary Ellen calling from Portland. Hi, Mary Ellen. Go ahead.
Yes. I was trained way back when that we should all have Medicare for all, and I've been following the advice of a woman who's since passed, but to keep original Medicare. My question to you is this. When all this private market stuff is coming out, they can offer you anything, and by the time you end up having to use it, or maybe using something that you had bought of that you ended up needing, some service that you needed, and you find out it isn't covered, or it's covered, but the, you know, very little of it's covered at all. And I am in a fortunate situation. I'm 77 years old. I have Medicare. I have Medicaid. And I just read through a bill because I was hit by a car about 2 years ago. And it just came in for the last end of my physical therapy. And I'm seeing how little they pay. But they're saying that Quimby will go to Quimby or something like that, and then we'll go to Medicaid. And I understand Medicaid pays better than Medicare. So what is going on?
Joanne, I'm going to throw that to you.
Actually, I'm going to throw that to Kate because Medicare is strictly a federal program, so the Bureau of Insurance doesn't have any jurisdiction over it.
So it's possible you can have Medicare and Medicaid at the same time, and they provide different coverage. You know, Medicaid could basically wrap around the Medicare benefits, but I would suggest for questions, you know, related to Medicare benefits, for people to reach out to their local area agency on aging, and they can be connected by calling 1-877-353-3771, because the area agencies on aging are really the experts in terms of navigating different Medicare programs.
All right, Mary Ellen, thanks so much for your call. And I want to follow up on that with you, Julie, after the break, about a new report showing how many people still get into financial trouble because of catastrophic medical expenses. But we do need to do a quick break here. We are talking about the Affordable Care Act and health insurance coverage on Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Cancer Specialists, proud to be a member of the Dana-Farber Cancer Care Collaborative. Learn more at newenglandcancerspecialists.org. Bull Moose, offering an option of curbside pickup on books, movies, CDs, or video games. Curbside pickup is available at checkout at bullmoose.com. And Downeast Institute, encouraging you to support marine research and education by making an online gift today at downeastinstitute.org.
Elizabeth Oakes Smith passed away on November 16, 1893. Born in North Yarmouth in 1806, Smith was a poet, fiction writer, editor, lecturer, and women's rights activist whose career spanned six decades from the 1830s to the 1880s. Most well known at the start of her professional career for her poem, The Sinless Child, her reputation today rests on her feminist writings, including Woman and Her Needs, a series of essays published in the New York Tribune between 1850 and 1851. The essay series argued for women's spiritual and intellectual capacities, as well as women's equal rights to political and economic opportunities, including rights of franchise and higher education.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries and the Maine Maritime Museum. Happy birthday, Maine.
I'm Lisa Mullins. The election of Joe Biden to the White House has the potential to shift the country's relationship with the rest of the world. We'll check in on reactions in Central and South America and former President Barack Obama on his new book and his hopes for a Biden administration. That's next time on Here and Now.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at noon right here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, answers to your questions about signing up for health insurance under the ACA. My guest, Kate Endy with Consumers for Affordable Healthcare, Julie Rovner with Kaiser Health News, and Joanne Rawlings-Secunda with the Maine Bureau of Insurance. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Julie, apparently in the Journal of the American Medical Association, there's this new report that says that 2017, 11 million Americans experienced catastrophic medical expenses, and that most of those people were privately insured. What's going on?
Well, this is a continuing problem that we've had in the U.S. really since medical bills started outstripping income, and it's called underinsurance. A lot of people have insurance that doesn't cover all of their bills. We've heard today from people, like the woman who called in who said that her premiums are going down, but her deductible is going up. The Affordable Care Act, what insurers decided to do when the Affordable Care Act said you have to cover all of these benefits that traditionally had not always been covered, like pregnancy and prescription drugs and mental health, they said, okay, we'll cover all of them, but we're going to slap on these really huge deductibles of $6,000 or $7,000 or $8,000 or $10,000. And that, you know, if you have something truly catastrophic and you reach the out-of-pocket maximum, they'll cover all covered services after that. But what happens is that just that deductible amount is catastrophic, can be considered catastrophic for many people because it's based on a percent of your income. So that's one of the things that President-elect Biden has said he wanted to do, was to actually make the Affordable Care Act benefit package more generous, so people at least with that type of insurance wouldn't be stuck with some of these huge bills. But that's not to say that there aren't a lot of people with employer-provided insurance, particularly people at small businesses who have insurance in name but sometimes can't afford to use it.
And I thought the whole idea of the Affordable Care Act, not just creating the marketplaces, but was to bring down the number of Americans who are filing for bankruptcy because of health care costs. Have we seen that happen? Have bankruptcies, health-related bankruptcies, gone down?
Well, I haven't actually seen the statistics on health-related bankruptcies, but certainly we know, I mean, the Affordable Care Act did a lot, and it helped a lot of people, particularly at sort of the above poverty, but sort of the lower end of the income spectrum because of those subsidies. But again, unless you're under 2.5 times poverty, those subsidies are only for your premiums and not for your other out-of-pocket costs. And then what the other thing that we've seen is that people who are just over the threshold to be able to get those subsidies are really getting hammered because the cost of individual insurance, if it's not subsidized, has gone up an enormous amount. So there are still a lot of things that need adjusting and fixing. It's important to remember that the Democrats who passed the Affordable Care Act lost the House in 2010. Democrats have not controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency since then, so they haven't been able to go back and try to fix any of these things. Republicans have wanted to get rid of the law this entire time, so they haven't been willing to go back and fix any of these things. There were a couple of efforts in 2018. Susan Collins was involved in one of those that almost got to the finish line, but not quite. So really, a lot of these sort of problems that could probably easily be addressed in legislation still haven't been.
Joey, anything you want to add about what's going on here in Maine?
Well, I mean, we really worked very hard in Maine to create the consumer protections just in case the ACA went away. But, you know, obviously now it's looking much more hopeful. But and then you look at things like the benefit plan designs that Commissioner Lambrou mentioned at the beginning about things like having, you know, your first visit with your primary care provider or a behavioral health provider have no copay, and your second and third visits not have to, you don't have to go through your deductible to get there. So, I mean, Maine has been working to try to create a situation where people can use the insurance that they've paid for.
An email here from Maggie. How long does it take to find out if I qualify for MaineCare? Should I apply for both a marketplace plan and MaineCare simultaneously? Kate. Kate and Dee, are you there? Did you hear the question?
Sorry. MaineCare terminations are made within 45 days, but we've been hearing that they're being made much, much quicker right now. And you can actually apply for both. If you just go to healthcare.gov and fill out that application, it screens people for marketplace eligibility. But if based off your income, it seems like you should be eligible for MaineCare, it will actually send that information to the Department of Health and Human Services in Maine. And then they will reach out and let you know if you need to provide additional information for MaineCare. So you can, the idea was to create a no wrong door approach. And so, you know, you could always just go to healthcare.gov as a starting point.
And so Maggie can apply for both and it will figure out which one is better for her.
Exactly.
Okay. We'll go to John, who's calling from Portland. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yes. My question is, are there any requirements that you have to carry health care coverage before you become eligible, before you turn 65 or become eligible for Medicare, Medicaid?
All right. Yeah, Julie, are there requirements now that you have to have health care?
No. In fact, of course, that's what the Supreme Court case is about. When they took away the penalty for not having insurance, what the plaintiffs in the case are arguing is that there's now what they call a naked mandate. It's because the law still says, the law used to say you shall have insurance or pay a fine of X. Now it says you shall have insurance or pay a fine of zero. But effectively, there never was really a requirement unless, you know, you were always free to not carry insurance and pay the penalty, which really wasn't all that big. Now there's no penalty, and there's no there's no prerequisite for getting on Medicare, except to have paid Social Security taxes. And if you've not paid Social Security taxes for at least 10 years, then you can buy into Medicare.
All right, John, thanks for your question. We'll go to Denise calling from Oldenboro, New Hampshire. Hi, Denise. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm concerned about the subsidies. I have been on the plan for 3 years, or this will be my third year. I've always filed the proper paperwork with the IRS with my taxes, and the marketplace has been telling me that I don't have a record of filing that paperwork for 2019. So they said that maybe the IRS is just behind schedule this year, and they don't have the information. So I'm really concerned about that. And also, I had to file some paperwork because I'm going to start getting Social Security in January. I'm 64. And so I'm concerned about the subsidies mainly because I can't afford it without them.
Kate.
So I would encourage you to contact our helpline for kind of more advanced support in this. But, you know, in general, when subsidies are reconciled, you know, on your taxes, like you said. And so as long as you're filing that paperwork, you know, you should be all set. And you should be able to go in because, you know, we know sometimes that there are delays, and, you know, documents getting uploaded or things like that. But if you're having trouble accessing the subsidies now, then I would encourage you to give us a call at 1-800-965-7476.
Denise, good luck to you. We have an email here from Jay. Joe Biden campaigned on a public option for the ACA. Will this require congressional approval, or can it be done by executive order? Julie, that sounds like a question for you.
It is, and no, it can't be done by executive order. It would require congressional approval, even if, you know, something unexpected happens and the Democrats win both of the seats in Georgia in a runoff. They would still have only a 50-50 Senate with Vice President Harris breaking the tie. It would be really hard to get a public option through. It would be really hard to get a public option through, even if the Democrats had, you know, won 53 or 54 seats. It's going to be, you know, people who want Medicare for all should note that even getting a public option through Congress would be an enormous effort. They wanted one with the Affordable Care Act when they had 60 votes in the Senate, and they couldn't get it through. So I'm not sure how much opinion on Capitol Hill has changed about this, but it is something that's looking increasingly unlikely, at least for the next 2 years.
An email here from Deb. My family has health coverage with Harvard Pilgrim that was set up under the ACA starting January 1st, 2020. Harvard Pilgrim sent us confirmation that we're all set for 2021. However, we received an email from healthcare.gov saying their records show we are potentially at risk of losing assistance to reduce the amount we pay for our monthly health insurance premiums. Do we need to re-enroll when Harvard Pilgrim says we're all set and we are happy with the cost and coverage? Kate, what does this sound like to you?
So, you know, for most people, they can automatically re-enroll in the same plan if that plan is still available. But the marketplace is going to have more updated information about eligibility for the tax credit subsidies. And so if the marketplace is saying that you're at risk of losing that subsidy, then it sounds like, you know, I'd recommend going in to your marketplace account and just making sure that all of your information is up to date and they have all the information they need. I'll also say that sometimes the information regarding the premium price on those letters that are sent out by carriers about the estimate of how much it's going to cost this year after your subsidies, it's not always accurate. And so I would encourage people, even if they are happy with you know, their plan and it looks like it's, you know, still a right fit for them in terms of premium, to still go into their marketplace account just to explore all of their options.
What a reason that it would that Deb would be at risk of losing her assistance is if she or her husband got a raise?
Potentially. It depends, you know, on how much that raise was. But the marketplace is really looking at your projected annual income for, you know, 2021 at this point. And so if you've had, you know, different changes in income this year, you know, that's, it's not going to necessarily impact your eligibility unless that's continued on into next year. It could also be, you know, somebody mentioned earlier that the marketplace didn't have information about reconciling their taxes from last year. So it could be something along those lines as well. So that's why we'd recommend just going in and checking, updating your marketplace account, if for no other reason, just to see the options that are available to you this year. Because like I said, the premium estimate on those letters isn't always accurate.
Christopher on Facebook writes, Company healthcare costs me $331 per week, and I have a $14,000 deductible for me and my wife. Joanne, does that sound about right? Is that typical?
It goes all over the place. It depends on the size of the company and, you know, and just how much that the employer can afford to put out there. So, yeah, I mean, having that size deductible, that's not unusual at all.
And Julie, if you have healthcare through health insurance coverage through your employer, you are not eligible for plans on the ACA marketplace, correct?
Well, it depends. Well, you can always buy a plan. You're not eligible for subsidies in most cases, but, and it sounds like it's possible for this listener, if that insurance costs more than a certain percentage of your income, I think it's 9.5%, but I'm not positive what that exact number is, then you could be eligible for a subsidy, although it's only for individual subsidy. That requirement is only for individual coverage, not for family coverage, so it can get tricky. But if you have really, really expensive employer insurance, you could be eligible for a subsidy. And also, I should add, for the last listener who's gotten the note from the IRS, I'm hearing about that increasingly. I think the IRS is telling people that they don't have the paperwork that these individuals filed and have copies of for the previous year. And if you don't file that paperwork with your taxes, you might not be eligible for subsidies. So I'm guessing this is all part of the same problem.
And Kate, I want to go back to Christopher's point about how expensive his health coverage is and Julie's point. Would you say if you feel as though your health insurance coverage through your employer is really expensive, you ought to go onto the website and see if perhaps you could get a better deal?
Yeah, you can always explore the website. People can always call our helpline and we can kind of walk them through that scenario too and kind of do some calculations to see if it looks like they might qualify for subsidies based off of the amount they are, you know, their employer coverage is costing. As Julie mentioned, you know, that calculation is based off of how much it costs to cover the employee only and not their spouse or dependent, which is how, you know, so many people fall into what we call the family glitch, which is basically, you know, the coverage for their spouse and dependents is expensive through the employer, but still, you know, prohibits them from accessing the subsidies on the marketplace.
Well, thank you all for being here and answering all of these questions, good questions about health care coverage. Julie Rovner, the chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News and author of Healthcare Politics and Policy A to Z. Joanne Rawlings-Secunda, director of the Consumer Healthcare Division of the Maine Bureau of Insurance. And Kate Endy, policy director for Consumers for Affordable Healthcare. Today's sound engineer, Nikki Shields. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.